Hello and welcome along to this week's RTE Rugby Podcast. We are heading towards week two of the Guinness Women's Six Nations. Ireland defeated 38-17 by France last Saturday, but positives aplenty out of that performance. We'll be talking over that and looking ahead to the Easter Sunday visit of Italy to the RDS. And also because it's Easter holidays, I've been able to nag Fiona Coughlin into joining us now that the schools are off. Fiona, great to have you back on the pod.
Cheers, delighted to be here.
And also with us this week is former Ireland and Scotland women's coach Philip Doyle. Philip, great to have you on board with us as well this week.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Before we get into the matches themselves, guys, I might just jump in with a story that came out over the weekend, because I think it's of interest really to a fairly broad family of rugby fans in Ireland. But the GAA have cleared the way for Leinster to potentially play some of their knockout games later this season at Croke Park if needed. Things like a Champions Cup semi-final or a URC final if Leinster do get there. While the Aviva Stadium is unavailable with the Europa League final going on and things like that. But also, interestingly, what came out of that as well is a couple of places have reported that Nolan Park in Kilkenny has also been greenlit for one or more URC games for Leinster down the line next season, when there's going to be some works going on at the RDS. Now, I was reading about it today again in the Irish Independent. They say there aren't any specific plans laid out for specific games just yet. It's just a kind of a, they're exploring their options, I suppose. Fiona, it's an interesting enough one. I think more so the Nolan Park and Kilkenny one. Like, we've seen rugby at Croke Park and it's been fantastic, but I think it probably is important for Leinster and rugby in Ireland as well that more games are moved out to places like a Kilkenny or places that haven't seen professional rugby before.
Yeah, look, I think it's a great idea. And you look what Leinster have done, even with their pre-season training or even in the middle of the season, is going around the clubs and around the province and letting the fans in those areas see them in the local club grounds. So then to bring a game to Nolan Park, I don't know, what's the capacity? 20-odd thousand?
27.
Okay, so like great capacity. And it just gives people an opportunity not to have to come to Dublin all the time. But just it allows them more accessible. And if you talk about trying to grow the game and engage more people, bring it to them as opposed to making them come to it. And like, obviously in Munster, they've had huge success bringing it to Porky Cueve. So hopefully that if it does happen, and it should happen, that it will be successful.
Yeah, like we saw Ulster as well, Philip, bringing a pre-season game into Cavan as well when Kingspan Stadium was getting its pitch relayed in the summer. Like, it's important that the provinces are looking outside of the cities that they're based in. And these are the things that benefit both the men's and women's game down the line, where, like, if you can get, you know, 10,000-15,000 kids in Kilkenny into a professional game, it might just kind of tick an interest in them to go down to the local rugby club.
Absolutely. And when you think about Kilkenny, of all places, the home of hurling, really, especially in Leinster. So bringing rugby out to a wider audience is so important. I can't see a Munster playing there. I think that's it. 27,000 is too small for a Munster game. But you can certainly handpick your opposition, and especially, well, let's say weaker opposition, so it's a better game for these newbies coming in to see Leinster. But I agree with Fiona, like, not coming up to Dublin every week is a big, big plus for the Midlands rugby in general, outside of Leinster, even like Connacht and Munster. It'll be very, very, very popular for people to do that on your doorstep, a professional rugby game. Very, very good idea.
Yeah, and like that's a point as well. Like, I imagine there are plenty of people in Carlow, Kilkenny, Laois, parts of Kildare, Meath, Westmeath that are probably traipsing up into Dublin 9-10 times a year to watch Leinster games at the RDS as well. They're not just, this isn't a Dublin team. It's meant to be a provincial team, and that's what they're probably trying to tap into.
Yeah, and I think we've seen that, like, with the growth of game in terms of the schools and clubs playing and players coming through different pathways, that it's not just, I know it's predominantly those private schools, but you see the likes of the Osborne brothers there both playing together last weekend from Naas, and the Byrne brothers that have obviously, I know they went to a private school, but coming from Carlow and things like that, just looking to expand and grow that game. And it's bloody expensive to come to Dublin all the time. You know, it's not just the ticket for the game, it's the whole transport thing, it's everything around it. So, look, I think it's brilliant. And I've seen, particularly in the women's game, the growth of the clubs outside Dublin has actually been bigger than anywhere else. So I think it's going to be really popular. And, you know, I think maybe Connacht should look to do it when they have to develop their grounds down there. So, like, there's opportunity down there as well. So, yeah, it's a fair play. It's great the GAA are opening up. I know the branches probably obviously have to pay the rental cost of it, but they'll hopefully get it back in ticket returns. And as I said, the most important thing is growing the game and expanding it into those areas.
Yeah, like according to that story in the Independent this morning, like all Leinster need to do is push a door that'll open fairly easily to them. There's, you know, I think they've spoken to numerous county boards there, and like, you know, the Wexford County Board are keen to have them in at some point. You know, this isn't just a Kilkenny thing as well. They've tons of options for when the RDS is being redeveloped. But as Fiona said, this kind of pivots it nicely into the women's game and leading into the Six Nations, where, like, if you look at the demographic and the spread of clubs in and spread of counties in the Irish women's team compared to the men's, like, we are seeing girls coming through from right across the country in the likes of Carlow and Kilkenny and, you know, parts of the Midlands as well. And it probably always has been the case over the last few years, Philip.
Yeah, no, it has been. We are pulling our Irish women rugby players from all around the country, but I think it still needs more. I'm from Wexford myself, live down there. And yeah, we've had a fair representation on the Irish squad over the years. But I'm also involved in Gorey Rugby Club and the women's teams. I help out there every now and again. And it does struggle. It comes in cycles. You know, you're strong for 2 years and then you're weak for 3 years. So I still think there's an awful lot of work to do down in these provincial areas. So the more focus the RFU give that, will definitely benefit the women's game.
I'm coming from, I'm involved obviously in schools rugby, girls schools rugby. I've seen huge growth, but I also see huge potential for growth. And, you know, the opportunities there are huge. I'm not saying they need to go like the junior and senior cup, but to engage numbers at a grassroots level, I think there's huge potential there. And I think that is happening. Like, I was just looking at the Munster under 14, 16 and 18 finals, club finals, and it's Clonakilty this year, which years ago were a stronghold. It's great to see them coming back. If you look at the current Irish team, you have three players coming from Ballinasloe underage systems there. And, you know, I think it's great people in the club doing great work. And I think if there's a more concerted area around schools and clubs being connected, I think there's huge potential for growth.
Yeah, I think that the GAA still have a huge grasp on young female athletes. It is the go-to sport. And going back to the Leinster model of moving their fixtures around, it can only benefit rugby in Kilkenny or Wexford Park. It will loosen the grip slightly. It will show. And I'm not just talking Leinster men. I'm talking Leinster women as well, possibly. It will definitely get us out there more often.
Yeah, certainly will. It's going to be really interesting to see. And it leads us then into this weekend, Ireland hosting Italy at the RDS. And as we were talking about trying to spread the game around the country, it highlights the need that these three home games that Ireland have now this season, they have to be victories, not even on the pitch, and ideally on the pitch, but off the pitch, they have to be big victories as well. And Fiona, like, how vital is it for these home games that, for example, someone like Bevan Parsons or Eve Higgins are available to play in these home games in particular? Because when they're off on the seventh circuit, they're not playing games in Ireland. And I don't know, I think a lot of people would probably consider Bevan Parsons to be one of the most recognisable and one of the most marketable female rugby players in the country. And if you look back over the last couple of years, the opportunities that people have had to actually go and watch her play a rugby game in Ireland have been pretty scant over the last couple of years.
Yeah, like, how did she make that name? Was coming onto the scene as a 16-year-old and making her name in the Six Nations, in the 15s game. And as, like, people, very few people would know Eve Higgins. Eve Higgins is probably one of the top rugby players in the country. Mm. I've tracked Eve since she was 15 and have known about her since then. And I thought she would go into the 15s game early on, and she didn't. It was only a couple of years ago that she got in playing. But, like, I think it's important that Ireland have their strongest team out. I think it's important that those players that are back from sevens are playing for the full tournament. I don't think it's just about the home games. I think it's for the full tournament, for the importance, for the cohesiveness of the squad. But yeah, like, people want buy into household names and big players, and they want to see the best players on show. And that doesn't matter if it's women's or men's rugby, and they want to just see the best players on show. And I think it would be a great sight to have Baden Parsons running the length of the pitch in the RDS. But yeah, like, I think it's huge for the game, but we need to get people into the stadium now watching. We need bums on seats, and I think that's a really important area to grow the game as well, as getting bums on seats.
See, I tell you what I would slightly unhappy about is, while Eve Higgins, Bevan Parsons, Adrian Riley are all fantastic players, they are the best. There's no doubt about it. And from backs wise, they are one of the best players in the country. But they haven't played 15s
since the WSB.
They came into that French game cold. And I could see that a mile away with Parsons, especially with 30 players on the pitch, not 14. Big difference. Her decision making had to be quicker in the 15s because there's no space, and I think she didn't play her best game by any stretch. I would like to see more time put across. They should have been played in the Celtic Challenge, at least one or two games, just to get back up to the rhythm. I don't know how you feel about that.
No, I fully agree, but it's all that balancing act. Like, where'd you take them out? Would they have won that medal in Perth if those girls had been in and out of sevens and 15s? And I think, obviously, this is an Olympic year. I was actually surprised that they were released for 15s because the Olympic year. I'm delighted they were, but I agree with you in the fact that they haven't played any 15s rugby since the WXV tournament. It took them time to warm up into the game. Eve Higgins took her time to warm up. I think she did get into the game. Baven didn't get the opportunity she gets on a sevens pitch. Adrian Riley as well. You know, she was caught a few times at the back of rucks, which she wasn't used to. So I fully agree on that front. But I think they are the best players. But it is about that game time in 15s and within the squad. I think they only had 3 days in training before they went into the week of the match. So it's not a huge amount of time. And it could tell.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. You can tell it a mile away. But yeah, I still like to see them a little bit more 15s experience coming into it. They could have let in a try, no problem, just because of rustiness. Mm-hmm. So I definitely think that definitely needs to be addressed. I do hope they do stay for the whole Six Nations, though. That is absolutely key. For the consistency, as Fee said earlier. So, wait and see. Why do you think, Fee, they were brought into the Six Nations? Like, is it a case where the RFU went, where the 15s are basically at rock bottom now? We can't go any lower. Like, they need a hand.
So last year, they weren't in at all because they were going for Olympic qualifications. So, Grant, the year before, they were in and out, depending on tournaments. So this year, they had that Olympic qualification. Yeah, the women's game is rock bottom. I'd say Scott came in and he dictated a couple of things. And I know he says he has a good working relationship with Alan Temple-Jones. But I would imagine it's very important that Ireland gets to the next World Cup. Obviously, that qualification, first and foremost, is the next best finisher after England and France, which you would imagine is third place finish. So whether they get those three home wins or not. But then on top of that, it goes to WXV. Being in WXV2, comes to fourth, fifth ranked team, so they know that if they get maybe one home win, that'll be enough to get into WXV2. Yeah. So I'd say that's where the push has come from, that they need to be at the next World Cup in England.
Yeah, I did get the sense, Scott Beamans, he's kept his cards close to his chest. We've asked him a couple of times, like, will these players be available for the course of the championship? And I think reading between the lines, there's probably a sense of, after a few rounds, we'll see how the results are, and wait and see. Maybe if Ireland have a couple of wins heading into the last two games or so, they might be kept. If things are going badly, maybe, you know, hope might be lost. They might go back to sevens. But also, I do get the impression, I think you kind of said it as well, Fee, that when Scott Beaman would have come in and was probably interviewing for the job, there was probably a lean put in there that he wanted to have a bit more give and take between sevens and 15s, rather than just the take we've seen in the last couple of years.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I think it was telling that Eve Higgins took over the captaincy when Idel McNamara went off. So that's of where they hold her within the squad. And, you know, I know she was been in there very little. So I wonder, did that like ruffle the feathers a bit with others that have been in there? But hopefully that's a sign that she's going to be in there for the whole thing. And yeah, that they can build a little bit of consistency in the way they're playing.
You know as well as I do, Fee, that the consistency is absolutely everything. You want to get anywhere in international rugby, you have to be consistency. Over the last number of years, Ireland have been chopping and changing way too much. So I just really hope for this squad that that consistency stays firm and that it will come through in the performances. No doubt about it.
Well, I mean, speaking of that, and that can kind of lead us into the match itself then, Philip. France 38, Ireland 17. You speak about like consistency and things like that. And I think one of the things that jumped out, and it was spoken about on Against the Head on Monday night, was the difference a year has made with a lot of these players being in this professional environment where there's been a clear jump and a clear improvement in physicality and strength and conditioning. And they look like a way more connected and joined up team, and just a way more physical team than they probably were 12 months ago.
Yeah, well, you said the most important word, professional.
Mm.
For me, from what I've been hearing from within the camp, it's incredibly professionally run. And the girls have really bought into that. And they're a lot clearer on their goals and their expectations and what's expected of the individual. So they know exactly where they stand, which is the most important thing for an international Irish women's rugby player. They need to know where they stand. And he's given them, it's very clear apparently. So so that in itself is key to the whole thing. And then we have seen improvements in the tackle technique, especially the double up tackle is very impressive. Dan has obviously done a lot of work in a very short period of time. So compliments to him. And physicality has come up. Fitness. Yeah, I was actually worried there. We were doing a hell of a lot of defending in the first half, and I thought we were going to fall away in the second half, but no, we didn't. So, plaudits to the conditioning coaches there. So they are definitely up there. I still think there's a few very weak areas in their defense, particularly, I don't mean to finger point, but the new cap on the right wing, defensively looked very, very weak. And I believe she's a fantastic attacking player, but I think things will definitely have to show up there.
To continue though on that conditioning side, and as you said, like you were a bit worried with the amount of defending they were doing in the first half that things would fade away late on. Like looking back on last year, Fiona, before the match I was looking through, 28% of the points Ireland conceded in last year's Six Nations came in the final 10 minutes of games, like where they were putting up as good a fight as they could for the first 70 and were just absolutely gassed for those final 10 minutes, and teams like England and France were just putting them away, and Scotland and Italy as well. This time round, and I know it's probably a small thing to be picking out of a 38-17 defeat, but winning those last 10 minutes, 14 points to 7, scoring 2 tries, and not looking like they were out on their feet or not looking like they'd dropped their heads in those last 10 minutes is a big step up.
Yeah, I think there's two things there. There's obviously the strength and conditioning piece, which, to be fair, is actually probably an easy enough piece once you have time with players and that you have them in that program, that you get them in the gym, you get them running on the pitch, and you're able to get people fit and you're able to get people strong. I think there's a lot around their heads not dropping. You know, France came back to them strongly in the second half and they looked together. There looked like an energy within the squad. And I don't mean a fitness energy. I mean like a will and a want kind of energy.
A mental energy.
And like that, a lot of that comes off the pitch. And I know they've Sean Ryan in there from a leadership and culture point of view, and like looking at the standards that they hold themselves to. And, you know, that transfers then onto the pitch. When you're down at dark moments on a pitch that you know that you're together, you know the reason you're there and you know what you're trying to achieve at the end of it. And look, France are a very good side. Going away to France is incredibly difficult. No Irish team has ever won away in France. It's a really intimidating environment to go to. And, you know, I think that they fronted up really well. You know, yes, they were beaten. They were beaten very well, but I still think they fronted up and they put their best foot forward at the moment. You know, I think that's where they're at. And, you know, credit to Sean Ryan for the work that he's done off the pitch to get them to that. But it needs to grow now and it needs to develop as the games go on, and particularly for home matches.
I think their understanding of what their jobs were is very clear, which is very good to see. Like they did, I think it was 4 or 5 meter exits, turnovers and exits. It was the exits that I was most impressed with, how they actually got back out of what they did, 2 or 3 different ways of doing it. And that to me was very, very good understanding and very impressive.
Particularly when they're under pressure.
Massive pressure.
Yeah. But also then just the kind of staying cool and keeping calm when you are under pressure deep in your own 22 to just, okay, we've won the ball back. What's the next job? We get out of our 22 rather than someone probably just panicking a little bit and taking a rash option.
They must be, in fairness, that all comes down to what they're doing in training. So they must be training at high, very high intensity, especially in their own 22s. They must be going through a lot of different scenarios and different skills being done there. So it's obviously paying off.
Scott did say that obviously they had no warm-up games, so they came from the Celtic Challenge Cup, and he said that they were training at a higher intensity and he was hopeful that it would transfer then into the game because they had none of those warm-up games. And you know, I think it did. I think their skill set was better as well in certain areas under pressure. So obviously what they are doing at training is working. It's just now lifting it up to another level.
One of the other areas then that is probably a concern and has been a concern for a long time is around the line-out. If we're talking set pieces in general, scrum was solid enough for the most part. France kind of got on top of them a couple of times in the second half, but I think that was probably, it's probably the lack of depth maybe that they're still trying to build across that second row. But the starting three, if you're talking about a front row for a scrum, looked pretty solid. But it was at the line-out where, again, they're struggling. It was an issue last year. 5 out of 9 against France from the line-out, and same issues as well as last year. Fiona, yeah. The line-out, it was something we've been talking about this for months now around the Ireland men's team, and with them it's probably been small little fixes where a throw is marginally off or there's a tiny little timing issue. But the difficult thing for Ireland at the moment is this looks like there are multiple areas that are kind of going wrong here.
Yeah, the only one 5 and 9, but only 3 of them were clean that they could do anything off, and the 3 they won clean they decided to maul off. So like, it affects then their attack on whatever they want to do. And yeah, it was a multitude of things. It was an overthrow, it was a missed call, it was a missed lift. So it was a whole area of things. Like, I don't think they have in their pack a huge number of line out options. You know, out and out line out jumpers. I don't know, Goose, what you think on that, but you know, Hannah O'Connor obviously was in there because Sam Monaghan is injured, but she wasn't even named on the initial training squad. Like, she was on a training panel as opposed to the initial 34. Outside that, Dorothy Wall's not the most natural jumper. Your back row, you don't really have most natural jumpers in it. So I think that's an area of concern. He's picking that squad for what they bring around the pitch, but not necessarily their line out jumping.
Yeah. See, I think it's primarily the throw. I think Niamh Jones is limited. She can't hit a 6 ball that I can see that we have. I haven't seen anything in the last year really of any consistency.
But it's not just 6, Goose. Like, it's.
Oh, I know. But even four to 6. But you're dead right. Hannah is really the only line-out option, real line-out jumper in that all pack this weekend. Mm. This week, I'm sure Monaghan's going to come in. That will increase that. But we definitely need an option off the back. And I think it's a mixture of everything. Line out throw options. I see they went down to a 5-man at one stage, which worked.
They went down a good few times to 5-man.
Yeah. So, but as you said, they go to the mall.
Mm.
You know, which is great in one way if you're successful off it, but a 5-man mall isn't usually that resourceful. So, like, we're not seeing the backs unleashed yet. Monaghan has to come in this weekend. For who will be a very good question, because for me, I would stick with Hannah O'Connor simply because of that gives you another line-out option. And while Dorothy Wall, I think, did very industrious type of game, really good. The two of them played very well. Like, they stuck to their game, got through a tremendous amount of work. But for me, at the end of the day, it's down to line-out.
Yeah, I actually agree with you. And I think they both, for two back rows that have moved into the second row this season, I think they were both really hard working, great engines in the scrum, got around the pitch, huge amount. I think Doherty had like four dominant tackles, you know, involved in a lot of rucks. But if you want to go off that set piece, which is so important, you do need as many line out options as possible. So if that's the case, it would probably be Hannah and Sam, which it would be tough on Doherty.
I know you mentioned as well, Fiona, like Hannah O'Connor obviously wasn't included initially. She was just one of the training panelists. Would it give you a bit of reassurance at the very least that the coaching group is somewhat open-minded, that they didn't just kind of decide on, okay, Hannah O'Connor is a training panelist, and maybe after a week or so of seeing her, they went, do you know what? She's actually more than good enough still these days to be involved in our team, and we're happy to call her up.
Yeah, I thought it was a bit strange that she was a training panelist at her age and experience, but it was probably the fact that she's not in there as one of those professional players. Like, she's still obviously teaching, so that probably was a reasoning behind that. But yeah, look, it's good to see. She obviously produced it on the training pitch as well, helped then the fact that Sam probably got injured, that they needed someone with more experience in there as well, and that line out option. So yeah, it is good that they're open to that. And I know he's had conversations with Cliona Maloney about the future and where she stands with the Irish squad, and don't mean to bring it in on this weekend, but like that's still it's conversation, it's not a closed door as still.
Yeah, I work with Hannah an awful lot in Blackrock, where I coached for the last couple of years, so I know Hannah extremely well. She was obviously very disappointed to be one stage she was actually off the panel, and then she got the training panel, but Hannah just got dogged basically, and she trained her way onto that panel. Yes, she was lucky that Monaghan got injured, but she trained her way onto that, and it was she told me it was recognized how well she has done, and with her leadership skills in the Celtic challenge as well. So all in all, yeah, she's a damn hard worker, I can tell you.
Yeah, and like I definitely was a little bit reassured seeing her in the team last week, particularly when Sam Monaghan wasn't out. Like, when you were losing a leader like Sam Monaghan and probably one of the main line-out players, now that Nicola Friday was gone, Fiona, like it was reassuring to see that, you know, they recognise, okay, this is an away game in France. You probably want to get someone who's experienced in there to fill that hole. Rather, like, you know, they could have gone with a younger player who has one or two caps and thrown them in at the deep end.
They could have easily gone with Ian McCurry.
Yeah. But, you know, having an experienced head in there, that was a day for an experienced head out in France.
Yeah, it was definitely the right decision. And I think she gave it back to them in spades as well for that decision to go with her. I think her work rate was incredible. And, you know, just it's a young enough squad. And you don't want to get rid of all that old experience as well. And as Goose said, the doggedness then as well, which is needed away in France. So, you know, fair play to the management for recognising that, recognising her hard work and selecting her.
Another selection call this week. Okay, we're probably assuming Sam Monaghan's going to be coming in. From what we could see, she was taking a full part in the warm-up on Saturday. So I would say was probably actually okay to play if they were absolutely desperate, but probably just had an eye on this game against Italy. At out half this week, Philip, would you be going with Nicole Fowley or Dan O'Brien? Because they made that switch at half time, and you could see they kind of changed up the way they were playing as well. If you look back at it, Nicole kicked 19 times in those opening 40 minutes. Dan only kicked 7. So there's definitely two different ways of playing there. Which way would you be leaning for this week?
Really good question, because I'm a massive fan of Foley. Massive.
And I thought she kicked really, really well.
Look, Fiona knows this about me well, that I hate playing international rugby in our own half, especially this particular team, because we don't have the skill set yet. We don't have the full understanding of our attack yet. So get us out of the half and then start playing from there. I would have liked to see us kick more to touch and then attack their line out rather than have their back three running back at us. But that's up to different coaches. I thought she played incredibly well. She stuck to the game plan. That was obviously the game plan. She stuck to it. That's what she's good at. She's an extremely intelligent footballer. She can see things very early. Would she be the quickest? No, she's not the quickest. And that's where I think the difference may come in this weekend. Quickness. Are we going to play a quick, fast game? Are we going to let the ball out a little bit further out using our back line? Hopefully we do. If that's the case, I'd be playing Dana.
I think that's for me the difference. Yeah, I just think it was probably the game plan that they wanted to put in place in the first half. It was kick, kick, kick. And in the second half, they decided anytime we're in our own half, let's look to move it. And we saw Aoife Dalton stand in at first receiver a lot and Dana go in at second receiver behind the next pod. And she was still always looking for that kick option, but they did look to move it more. So, like, it's not that Nicole can't play that passing game. I think it was just that she was told to kick at every opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, if they're going to play that kicking game, we're very limited with opportunities. We only have one kicker on the pitch at their out half. That's either Nicole or it's Dana. So it makes it really, really easy for the back three on the opposition that they're not manipulated at all, where there was lots of space in between the front line and the back line that we just didn't use at all. We've no box kick from our scrum halves, and there's no one else in the back line that really kicks. Like, Lauren Delaney's not the most natural kicker of the ball, so we're quite limited if we play that kicking game. I think it was the right thing to do. I think it is the right thing to do in their own half. But when you have such exciting backs like Aoife Dalton and Eve Higgins, you want to see them in the game, not just in defence, which they were brilliant, but I want to see them with ball in hand as well and try and get the likes of Parsons in as well. But like, Dalton and Higgins are so exciting too.
Yeah, that's why I think you're going to see Dana this weekend.
I think it was probably like they'd both been injured coming into it, into that French game. And I think Nicole was back early, fitter, quicker, I think it was. And Dana was a little slower coming back. And that was the reason why she was on the bench anyway.
Where I think it's like, you got to think of the defense as well as attack, obviously. For me, Dana is the weaker defender. So that will definitely come into play. I don't think her tackle is nowhere near as good as. So that for me would come in definitely into the selection meeting. But I think I'd like to play a little bit faster game this weekend. I know we'll be matching Italy a little bit because they do like to play the ball relatively quickly, but you just can't ignore our centres and we've got to use them.
Yeah, and speaking of Aoife Dalton there, because you mentioned her, Fiona, like, I think she deserves a name check this week as well, because still 20 years old, I think, or maybe turning 21. If you look back, and she made her debut on that Japan tour and has started every single game since then. And you look at the development that she's made in a little under 2 years now. How much is having played three games alongside Eve Higgins in the centre as well during the WXV, and now it looks like that's ideally going to be the centre partnership for this Six Nations. How much do you think she can improve as well just by playing alongside someone like Eve Higgins, who you mentioned earlier is one of the best centres in the championship?
I think Aoife Dalton, she's moved obviously from 13 into 12, and it was a seamless move. She's like a little mini Lynn Cantwell. Sorry, she's probably taller than Lynn Cantwell. But she reminds me of Lynn Cantwell the way she plays. And I think she has potential to even grow even more, particularly in attack, but we have to give her that ball. Like, we saw her in defence, she was tenacious. She got her try because she didn't give up. She was up off the line making those hits. And I just want to see her with ball in hand. We saw her, I think, twice. She got the ball away to Brittany Hogan, and like, it was just brilliant interchange between the two of those. I think she's brilliant, and I think she has potential to grow even further.
Yeah, I was going to say the exact same about our friend Lynn. Very, very alike, very tenacious, very, very highly intelligent. You can just tell her she really is learning the game, and she's really buying into it, and her attitude, the try she scored, you could just see that was just pure attitude, hunting that player down and making her fumble. But you've got to remember that Anya Breen is still around, and she's coming back from a long-term injury, so I'm not sure about what match fitness, but Anya is also an absolute cracker of a player to have in your side.
And is a decent kicking option, if I remember correctly, as well?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. She can kick from centre, no problem. So it's fantastic to see. I can't see Enya coming in this week, but I'd love to see her get a bench place, and let's see what she can do and going forward.
One final point then on, like, evolving the attack and just trying to get more players involved. It was something that Ali Miller spoke about on Against the Head on Monday night, and going back to Bavin Parsons, like we mentioned earlier on in the podcast, about trying to get her onto the ball more. And she was kind of citing the example of how the Ireland men's team are using their wingers, where Mac Hansen or Calvin Nash and James Lowe are kind of constantly coming in off the wing, looking for work and kind of given that license to get involved a little bit more. How do you see that involvement coming?
It's a must for me. But unfortunately, it's going back to what we previously talked about, a good set piece.
Mm.
Or a good, decent breakdown where our speed is up in the breakdown. So for me, it's all down to the set piece again. That's going to allow her time to come into that line and get her timings correct. What do you think, Fee?
I think it comes back to our previous point of her not playing a huge amount of 15s either, and clearly knowing her role and having that experience of coming off the wing and being that having that license to roam. And similarly with Corrigan, like, she hasn't played a huge amount of senior rugby. Obviously, she was involved in the Celtic Challenge Cup where she was a try-score machine. But, like, was she really challenged? Like, did she have to ask questions of the defence to score those tries? Or was she put into those positions because they were playing against weaker opposition? So I think their opportunities playing against international opposition are going to be limited. So they need to get busier, but they need to have the, I suppose, confidence to do it. And if they haven't done it in previous games, because obviously Baden was playing sevens and Corrigan wasn't, you know, there wasn't a huge amount of opposition up against her. She didn't have to come off her wing as much. So I think it's up to the coaches now to give them that license to roam and that, you know, freedom to go look and go hunt for that ball, because they'll make huge inroads if they do. And yeah, I agree, set piece is important. But even in open play, trying to get in off shoulders and running between forwards, or even a disconnect between forwards and backs, they could be devastating. But they didn't look to come off their wing at all.
I'm fascinated to see this week as well, Philip, just how the change in expectation plays out on the pitch, where they go to France last week away from home. Nobody is really expecting a win, but what we wanted to see were, as Scott Beaman said, for them to fire a few shots. And I think they absolutely did. And we saw some green shoots. But now they're coming into a home game where there's a bit more expectation, not so much for them to show us something, but for us to see a result this week, and for them to step up and actually capitalize on the green shoots they gave last week.
Yeah, look, I think there's a real belief in this squad that they can actually start to play rugby, international rugby. I don't think they're going to get ahead of themselves too much. For the squad, I'm sure Scott's going to be in there just going, guys, we have to nail our set piece again. I know it's boring and cliches, but, you know, the backs ain't getting this ball unless we give them the ball. Mm-hmm. So the expectations will be high within the squad, definitely. They'll believe they can win it. I think they've got an awful lot of work to do still to get an actual win over the line. Like Italy held out England for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And that is no mean feat. I know England were down for 15 minutes of that 30 with 14 men because of the red card. But still, it took them a while to break them down. Italy, as Fee knows well, they are incredibly dogged. And they have a bit of skill. And they can run a ball from bloody anywhere. So, they'll know this, but look, I think the belief is high, but I still think they have an awful long way to go yet.
Yeah, I'd be of a similar thought. Like, Italy have threats, and like we saw last year, obviously they beat Ireland 24-7. They like any sort of loose play, any sort of loose kicking, any sort of, you know, pass that go to hand. They'll love that kind of openness and freedom to play their game. The likes of Rigoni. Solari's obviously injured now. She's out with a broken leg after that tackle from Beckett last week. Their captain's still not back, and they lost their number 8 to a dislocated shoulder. So they're down a number of bodies already, and some of their best players as well. I think if they're very clear on their game plan, and they, no doubt they'll have worked on their set piece this week. They were back in camp yesterday, so they've a good 4 days together to try and nail that line out in particular. You know, if they're able to launch off that and get some attack going, hopefully with a crowd behind them at home, that we can just see an improved performance again in terms of attack, and they keep up that defensive display again and they really put Italy under pressure. You know, but I do think it'll be a tough game and it'll be tight.
I'd like to see this weekend our scrum coming more into prevalent, that we actually go for scrum penalties against Italy.
Mm.
Because I think that front row is an exceptional front row at times. And with Manon coming back in, decent back row. It's a decent scrum. Yeah, we got caught once or twice against France. France are a very, very heavy, big pack. But when we get it right, we're not a bad scrummaging side. And I wouldn't call Italy the biggest side of all. So I think we'll have a key factor in there to try and get them back on their back foot.
Yeah, and like even on that scrum, Fiona, going back to last season, they got hosed out in Cardiff. They were taught a lesson there. But for the rest of those four games, the scrum pretty much held its own. And that was even in an Ireland team that was struggling quite badly. And we saw, while they did give up two penalties against France, one of those was in the last couple of minutes when changes had been made and you could see the players were tired. But for the rest of the game, they looked comfortable in retaining their own ball. And as Philip says, the next step now is to actually try turn it into a weapon.
Yeah, and I think like we saw the break even away from eight up the pitch off the back of the scrum, that it was so solid. And then they had sucked in the French back row, the change that she got from that. But yeah, I agree with you. I think it's a really strong eight, starting eight. I do think when changes are made, and we saw that at the weekend when Si McGrath came on, they moved to Toulouse head, moved Linda to tight head, and then moved Linda back again. It was just a whole lot of messing. But the starting eight, they're very clear on their process. They're very tight together. They get nice and low, and they can challenge. So it'll be interesting to see. One, I would imagine selection stays the same. Apart from Sam Monaghan into that eight, I would imagine the rest of the pack stays the same, and they'll go after it. But yeah, Italy, though, they can cover them. I agree, Goose, they're not the biggest, but they can just disrupt. Like they're just messy in there. They can disrupt as opposed to being technically very good. But if you have your processes right and you're connected, which Fogarty's done great work with them.
Final point on Ireland then. Give me a verdict. One word. Who wants to go first? Don't all rush.
Ireland win. Win.
I'm going to say Ireland win.
Good stuff.
Very, very, very tight.
So that's Sunday, 3 p.m. kickoff at the RDS. Get down to it. Final thing I want to bring up as well, Philip. Just Scotland, your old team as well, 2018 winners over Wales. And yeah, we're seeing a bit of a renaissance in Scottish women's rugby now. I know it was a missed conversion away from being a drawn game at the end, but this is the best run Scotland have been in a long, long, long
time. Yeah, seven wins now, seven in a row. That conversion, it's Scotland of old. They have evolved really well under Brian Eason, and who was my assistant coach at the time. So he's done a tremendous job there with Tyrone as well and doing the defence. But they still have an Achilles heel. They still let teams back into games. They still can't lock down a game. And they were comfortable. They were very comfortable 15 minutes to go, but they still can't hold it out. And that is a problem from old. But the way they've evolved is very nice, like very good. They're playing a beautiful style. Thank you, V. Beautiful style of rugby with Leona Lloyd on one wing, and I'm really impressed with Orr 13. She is a class act, you know. Hel Nelson at 10, just ruling the roost. Knows how to. They have so much more experience now. They qualified for that last World Cup, got in, didn't win anything, but got a massive amount of experience. When I had them, I don't think Scotland had won a match for something like 3 or 4 years, something mad. And then when we won down in South Africa, like I remember the bench coming on and I'm bawling their eyes crying. I was going, "You've just won." He says, "But we've never won in a blue jersey." You know, so the transformation is massive. I still think they have a bit to go, but they're certainly a fine team now.
Yeah, they're on the way up. Hopefully the bubble bursts just before they come to Belfast in round five. Good luck to them in all the other games. Absolutely.
Until then.
Yeah. Listen, guys, it's been great. That is our pod for this week. A reminder, Ireland against Italy is live on RT2 and RT Player on Sunday afternoon. Coverage underway from 2:30 p.m. And live commentary as well on RTE's Sunday Sport. Follow our live blog as well on rte.ie/sport. As well as that, you can see France against Scotland this Saturday. That's from 2:05 on RTE Player. And in the URC, Munster against Cardiff is on Saturday night on RT2 as well. 7 o'clock, that program's underway, 7:35 kickoff. Fee and Philip, thanks a million for joining us. Enjoy the games this weekend. And I'm sure we'll speak to you soon.
Cheers. See you later.
Cheers. Thank you very much.